Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with other, because grown-ups need story time too. Tomorrow Never Knows by Giles Booth, Episode 4, The Besom Way. You're crazy. There's no way off the island without being caught. Peggy was shaking her head as she spoke. We were hunkered down in the boat shed again, keeping out of the rain. What about your dad's boat, Roland? No way. We'd never get it out the harbour. It's kept chained up. Dad's only allowed out with an AP guard, an armed AP guard. There was an uneasy silence, none of us looking at the other. Eventually, I jumped up. I'll just walk right down the causeway when there's a low tide at night then. You won't make it. They'll shoot you.
Shoot me? Really?
Yes, really, said Roland. Someone tried last year. Evelyn Flinders' mum. She went crazy, bit like you are now. Decided she had to get off the island. She set out at night and they killed her. I heard my dad telling mum. They keep guards posted at night in the refuge. Snipers. She was never seen again. There was no funeral, nothing. That's why they keep the tide times secret. My dad has an almanac mine for the fishing. He has to keep it under lock and key. It's all a bit daft, really. You can work it out if you watch the clock and the sea and the moon. There's got to be something I can do. I need to go back to town, find my dad, and if he's not there, I'll find my teacher. No chance, said Peggy. There is the Besom Way, said Roland.
No, said Peggy. Don't go giving her ideas about that. She'd get stuck in the mud and drown.
What's the Besom Way?
An ancient track across to the mainland, said Roland. It was used long before the causeway was built, hundreds of years ago. There were these sticks like brooms, besoms they call them, marking the way. But it's dangerous. It's only passable at a very low tide, and even then you have to be really quick, which is hard because the mud's so sticky, and it's twice the length of the causeway.
You'd be even madder to try it, said Peggy. I doubt very much the besoms are all still there. You'd get lost, especially at night.
What about when there's a full moon, I asked.
I could try and sneak a look in my dad's almanac, suggested Roland.
Brilliant, I cried.
Mad, utterly mad. What will you do if you do get to the mainland? They'll just send you back again, or worse.
I'll worry about that when I get there.
Over the next couple of weeks, we hatched a plan. Roland's dad got flu, so Roland volunteered to help him with the fishing one Sunday, hoping to get access to the almanac. I was very excited to meet Roland in the boat shed the next day after school. I'd been sitting there waiting for what seemed like an eternity for him to show up, and the daylight dazzled my eyes when eventually he opened the door. He'd come alone.
"Where's Peggy?" I asked.
"She doesn't want anything to do with this," she says.
"Did you get it? The almanac?"
"No."
"What?"
"I tried, Kim, honest. I tried to distract Dad when he got it out of his locked drawer, but he was too careful. He put it back before I could get a look of it."
"No."
"I'm sorry. There is one thing we could try, though."
"What?"
He produced a tattered notebook. "I've been keeping my own records. I make rough notes of tide times and the phases of the moon. Well, they're marked on the calendar, see?"
We looked through the pages of his notebook, which showed his observations of approximate high and low tide times, with blanks filled in with estimates.
"I read in the encyclopedia that there's on average 12 hours and 25 minutes between tides, so I use that as an average. Then, when I get to make a real observation, I check it out and reset. I'm rarely out by more than 20 minutes."
I was very impressed by this, but I tried not to show it. Roland had worked out there was a full moon and a low tide just after midnight on the 17th of November. We went for a long walk on the beach, and when we were sure we weren't being followed, he showed me where the Besom Way went. It looked to me as if most of the markers were still there. There was even an old refuge in the distance, like the one on the causeway. Roland said he was pretty sure there weren't any snipers in it, and he hoped I wouldn't need to use it. When the evening came, I wore old dark clothes and packed my satchel with a flask of water and my copy of The Railway Children. I didn't take anything else because Roland had warned me I'd need to walk barefoot on account of the mud and carry my shoes and socks in a bag. I snuck out of the castle and walked as discreetly as I could to the start of the Besom Way. Both Roland and Peggy had come to see me off. "Sorry we can't come with you, not even halfway," said Roland. "It's too risky. Three of us would be too easy to spot, and we'd have to wash off all the mud." "I still think you're mad," said Peggy, but she gave me a hug. "Say hello to the outside world for me." "I will." I took my shoes and socks off and stuffed them in my satchel and set foot on the mud. It was freezing cold, and my feet made disgusting noises as I walked. The moon shone brightly in the clear sky, and I could see the mud, silver and wet, stretching out ahead of me. I slowly walked towards the first Besom. By the time I reached it, I looked back, and Peggy and Roland had vanished. I scanned the shoreline to check no one was watching me. Everything seemed quiet. The lights were out on most of the houses except the HQ building. So I kept walking slowly. It felt like the mud was getting wetter and stickier, but I decided it must have been my fears getting the better of me. I kept going. There was a rush of icy cold water across my feet. It was not my imagination. The tide was coming in. I looked at my watch. I'd been walking for 20 minutes. Then I remembered what Roland had said about his calculations. I'm rarely out by more than 20 minutes. If he was out by 20 minutes now, the tide could easily have turned. I started to panic. I looked around me. The shore of the island seemed a long way off, and the Besoms behind me now appeared to be all surrounded by water. Ahead of me, I could see the refuge. Was it closer than the shore? It was hard to tell, but it looked like there was less water that way, so I decided to try to reach it. The faster I tried to move, the more my feet sank in the mud. The water was once again lapping round my feet, but I had to keep going. I was almost at the refuge when I fell flat on my face. I felt the water start to surround me. I was soaking wet, covered in mud, freezing cold, tired and in total despair. I thought I would never see my granddad again, let alone my father or Miss Stranks. It was the thought of Miss Stranks that brought me to my senses. She was the one person who seemed to believe in me. I needed to live, I decided, if only to repay the faith that she'd put in me when no one else wanted to know. I pulled myself out of the wet mud and somehow found the strength to reach the refuge. I started to climb the rickety, slippery wooden ladder. Once my feet were out of the water, I felt safer, and I rested for a moment. Then, as I felt the water lapping around my feet again, I climbed the top and slumped inside the wooden hut on stilts. I'm not sure if I fell asleep, but I imagined it was summer again, and I was having lunch with Miss Stranks in her garden. Insects were buzzing about, and I was sitting on a rug eating a large slice of sponge cake with a cream and strawberry jam filling. Miss Stranks was sitting on the grass clutching a book. She looked beautiful in a long white dress. My father was there as well, wearing a smart jacket, pouring tea from a china teapot with a picture of the castle on it. Then I came to my senses. I heard the sound of a boat. I hunkered down, scared. Torchlight shone over my head. Someone was climbing the ladder. A face appeared. It was Roland's dad. I thought perhaps he'd come to rescue me and take me to the mainland. He took my hand and led me back down the ladder. But in the boat, there were two AP guards with guns, pointing at me and Roland's father. I thought I'd be taken back to Grandad in the castle. I was wrong. After we landed back in the harbour, the guards separated me from Roland's father, who said nothing. They took me at gunpoint to the HQ building. Once inside, a female AP guard removed my clothes, got me to shower and gave me a t-shirt and tracksuit bottoms that were far too big for me. Then I was given a cup of lukewarm tea and a biscuit. As soon as I finished it, she put me in a prison cell. A real prison cell. After a while, the light was turned off, but I didn't get any sleep on the hard bed. There was no window in the cell, and as they'd taken my watch off me, I had no idea how long I was there. I was imagining all kinds of horrors that might lie ahead of me, whether they'd interrogate me, if that might involve violence, and if they knew that Peggy and Roland had been helping me and how much trouble they might be in. Eventually the light came back on. It hurt my eyes. I saw the Judas window cover slide open and someone looking at me. I'd only recently learned that term, Judas window, from reading one of Grandad's old detective novels in the castle. The door opened. It was Grandad. I jumped up, hugged him and burst into tears. "I just wanted to go home," I cried. He patted my head. "Just like my father used to." I know, he said. After Grandad took me back to the castle and I changed into my own clothes, he took me for a walk around the farmland, away from the harbour. It was cold and windy, but the sun was shining. On this side of the island, there was just sea and some other distant islands, gulls swooping overhead and sheep quietly grazing. On that walk, he told me more than anyone ever had before about our history. He apologised for not being honest with me sooner. He said he just didn't know how to tell me such bad news, that as things stood, I was highly unlikely to be allowed to go back home to the bookshop and my old school on the mainland. My father, as far as he knew, was still alive, but he was in prison in Oxford. He'd been accused of being connected with the Daughters of Ada. He said they were a terrorist group who were trying to overthrow the government of elders and bring back the technology that everyone used before the Troubles. I asked him if that was why we'd had DOA graffitied on the bookshop. He said, perhaps. "Is he a member of the DOA?" I asked. "No, no, not your father. But he is part of a faction that's trying to persuade the elders to be a bit more liberal about the use of digital technology, computers." "What about the drone wars?" I asked. "Load of nonsense," he said. "Just a story designed to keep kids entertained and make the elders look heroic. There were no drone wars. There was just economic collapse." "What do you mean?" I asked. "Well, there were other factors, massive inequalities in society taking it to the breaking point, but it was also caused by a kind of technology called artificial general intelligence, and caused as well by the oligarchs, the super rich men who implemented it. Hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs, the economy collapsed, and there were riots that turned into a bloody uprising. Hungry, cold people started smashing up any kind of technology they could get their hands on. There was a government crackdown, of course, army on the streets. But then a pandemic hit. With the country in crisis, there was no way of preventing its spread or treating it. And millions died. We'll never know how many for sure. They filled parks with piles of corpses and burnt them. London was consumed by another great fire. Over the last 30 years, the elders took power and have been rebuilding society on pre-digital lines. But now, some people, like your father, think it's time to start using some digital technology again. Do you think that, Grandad? I'm sympathetic, let's put it that way. I just hope your father's faction wins out. There's a big vote next month at the General Assembly. It's make or break for your dad, I'm afraid. If the vote goes the right way, he'll be free. Maybe we'll all be free to leave the island. And if not... He squeezed my hand. Tomorrow Never Knows was written, read and mixed by Giles Booth. Original music by Lee Sperry. Join me next time when Roland has a birthday surprise for Kim. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production.